there's nothing left to burn, you've got to set yourself on fire. Particularly in Hartlepool. No, only kidding, Hartlepool. We love you. We were there last Friday, weren't we, Ed?
We certainly were.
I pointed out, I said, look, these are the locations that were used by the August filming team who were behind Harrigan.
This is true.
Yeah, and who actually wrote Harrigan?
That would be Arthur McKenzie.
Do you see the hesitancy that he actually put forward there, Arthur?
I just was checking.
You know, that sort of sense of, oh, was it? Was it not? Etc. Of course it was. And I sat myself down last Friday because I like to watch movies sitting down as opposed to standing up, Arthur. By the way, you are there. It's good. That's marvellous. Good morning. And I thought I'd pop the preview DVD in thanks to those wonderful publicity folk who sort of sent a little sneak preview copy. And I thought, yes, this is... Once you had the Osmonds and Crazy Horses in there, what's that to love? 1974, you know, yeah. Times is rough, all the rest of the bits and pieces. It was interesting. I mean, there were lots of good little gold nuggets in there, Arthur. What do you make of it? Oh, are you going to say, well, it's God's gift to the filmic world? I fully expect the Academy Awards to be already made and launched now. I mean, as a writer, and obviously you're close to it and the Bremmy's there, and I would certainly recommend people go and see it on the big screen as well. It's obviously, unless you have a big screen TV, it's a whole setup from there. I'm thinking a kind of cross between Get Carter and the Sweeney mixed with a kind of the Equalizer with Edward Woodward in there as well. I'm sort of thinking those kind of issues, really. But from your own perspective, has it proven to be everything you ever wished and envisaged when Grant and yourself spoke about the sort of thing in the first place? And I think there is a series in here, definitely. I like the characters that are actually there, particularly like the policewoman who suffers domestic violence but comes good in the end, which is marvellous.
Yes.
She was very good.
For me, it's about 75% there, because I know what's had to be left out, and a lot of little nuggets were left out, actually. But it was all about finance, you know, so at the end of the day, I just have to hand the baby over and hope that they do a good job with it. So I would have said 75%, I'm quite happy with it.
Yeah.
And when you're sitting in a cinema with 200 or 300 or 400 people, it's a different experience.
Very much so. Absolutely. And let's hope Stephen Tompkinson doesn't walk out on Simon Mayo, as indeed Naomi Watts apparently has. But there we are, that's by the by. Again, I think it worked in every sense of the word, and we look forward to chatting to Vince Woods, the director, obviously, of the fabulous piece in the second part of the programme. Was he okay, Arthur, or do you not want to go public about the whole thing?
No, it's terrific. He's quite a tenacious person.
Yeah.
So you've got to keep him back a little bit. But... He knows what he wants, and that's good, because he's got a decision. He's prepared to make decisions, you know. And I found in this business there's a lot of people don't want to make decisions. They want to leave it to somebody else.
I would agree. I mean, no spoilers, obviously. I did like some of the shots that were put together. I thought the burning of the clown's mask, very effective, very, very sort of iconic. Lots of moments were there. Sometimes, though, and I never mentioned this to Vince, whether it was an idea, I felt as though he kind of almost locked the camera off, and in essence it was almost as though you were watching a bit of a stage play. It was like a sort of long shot as opposed to lots of cutaways and intercuts, which is an interesting thing. I don't know if you found that, Arthur, but it's just an interesting...
Don't forget, I haven't copied anybody's style in writing it.
Exactly,
so
true.
Therefore, maybe that's just the way in which it comes out, you know, out of the oven.
Yeah.
I never copy anybody's work. I never went to see a play until I was nearly about 50. And it's just that you could be influenced by others, but what happens is you copy them. I've tried to copy nobody. People have said this is a bit like Get Caught. This is a bit... I hadn't thought it. It's just Arthur McKenzie, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, there we are. Sorry, I've just been multitasking. I just actually made friends with our district herbalist, Hannah Sylvester. There we are. So I just pressed that button. Do you do Facebook, Arthur, or is that something that you...
No, I don't know any of that.
I thought, because we're friends without the virtual sort of connection. It's very important. It's good.
I don't know Facebook, Twitter, any of that stuff.
And your life is probably the better for it.
Well, I mean, I haven't got time.
It's very true.
It's simple as that. I know where people do get a lot of comfort from it and whatnot, but they get an awful lot of grief as well.
Arthur, would you like to give me a number between 1 and 100, please?
23.
Oh, I I thought we were going to have a long, thought-out, agonised decision then in terms of which number we should actually go for. This is just a selection from the author who's actually coming in the second part of the programme today. He should be on his way, actually. That's Alan Stennett. He's written a book based on his grandfather's work in South Africa, Lincolnshire Lads on the Veldt, Letters Home from Volunteer Soldiers in the South Africa War, 1899 to 1903. And we'll just give you a little smidgen here of a letter which was actually sent to the Lincolnshire Echo, 20th of March 1900. At 3 p.m, the afternoon of Saturday, March 17th, we received our marching orders. We were not told what was to be our destination. We simply knew that we were going up country and that we were to be at the station next morning to leave Greenpoint Camp and its sand far behind. The news was received with great cheering and excitement along the line. Somehow it got about that we were going to Bloemfontein to join the regiment. The next morning we were up early. An order gave us some idea of the discomforts of campaigning. We were to take nothing with us but what we could carry on our backs. Each man had to leave his valise and two kit bags behind, where they would be stored until our return, one of our members being left in charge. Everything that we wished to take with us we had to carry in our pockets, and so we were forced to make a very careful selection. I was compelled to relinquish, among many other things, the stock of paper supplied to me by the Echo on which to write these letters. About 8 a.m. we struck our tents and ate a hearty breakfast among the stand. We were then served out with 100 rounds of ammunition per man and marched off between the lines of tents amid cheers from the heterogeneous collection of soldiers, wounded and unwounded. It being Sunday morning, there were not many people in the streets, but there was a fair crowd assembled at the station. In addition to us, the Norfolks, Gordons and Seaforths were to leave during the morning. Interesting little snapshot there, Arthur.
Very interesting, very well written as well.
Exactly, written by his correspondent. There's some of the other letters in this book. So it's a self-published piece, Letters Home from Volunteer Soldiers in the South African War, 1899 to 1903. Really heartwarming. And he makes it, you know, literally, that is just 113 years ago.
I know.
And I say,
it is, in
terms of that time thing. Sort of point being, you know, 1974, you know, one remembers it. Well, I mean, it seemed to be a lot bleaker than I remember 1974 being. I know there were three-day power cuts and various other bits and pieces, but or was that just Hartlepool? I don't know. Because, I mean, let's be honest, actually, it's not an anti-Hartlepool, because it happened to be shot in Hartlepool, because if memory serves, Arthur, that was the only place in the northeast the closest you can actually get to that.
Yeah.
I mean, is it sort of set in a kind of fictionalised...
It was bleak. Yeah. I remember it as bleak. It was very difficult as a policeman. At the end of the day, we didn't have proper radios, the communications were poor. There was a lot of unrest in the streets. There was a lot of ferment going on in the government. You know what I mean? It was. Don't forget, we were being given the information that, well, we're going to have to do this or that or the other. There's going to be riots or whatever. And of course, that does affect you. You know, so it especially when you're trying to do your paperwork by candlelight.
I could understand that. It's always a sort of possibility. There's one tale which one of these days I shall invite Arthur to share with the listener about a decapitated head at a car accident that came back in a bait box, lunch box, basically, Ed. But I think that might be a bit too strong for the morning audience. I don't know.
I wouldn't mention that one then.
You know, thanks,
save that for another time.
I think it might be something Jeff could actually incorporate in his traffic and travel, really, from that point
of view.
Right, we have made. Let's not tease Arthur. Would you like to give a sort of slightly sort of, you know, a version of that, which was a way of actually sort of ensuring that the police in Tyneside were on the case?
Which incident you're talking about?
This is the I think the incident where the chap comes in with a decapitated head and it's in his bait box.
It was me. I was dealing with an accident in Newcastle. I'd only been on the job a few weeks, and this lady had been decapitated to the car. There was three people killed altogether, and the head was in his garden, and I had the job of getting his head. And I knocked on the door of this house and asked if I had a biscuit tin or anything. And actually, they gave me one of them, like, big, I think it was like big Walker's crisp box thing.
Yes.
And I put it in there, and I'd been left with, you know, holding the baby. And
the head.
And when I went down for my bait to the section's house, the sergeant wanted to know what the hell I'd taken so long and what the hell I'd been doing. And, of course, I pulled the head out of the box when they were having their bait and said, this is what I've been doing.
Exactly.
And, of course, but the sad thing was that it was a woman's head. And it was a doctor. She was a doctor. Or she used to be a doctor. And I just had this thought flashed across my mind that in the morning, so I'd got up, washed her face, put her makeup on, and got to work.
Yeah, little thinking she'd be in your, you know? She'd have part of her body in your arm, in her arms by the
right.
end of the day. Yeah,
it's a good job. We don't know what's ahead of us.
No pun intended. I see what, yeah, yeah. So, it's what you see, bottom line, Ed, I couldn't have Arthur reveal that story to you before you went up to the northeast in case you panicked, because you went around those streets of Newcastle, you still sense that. You know.
So I completely lost my bearings, actually, in the northeast. I couldn't even tell which way south was, and that was scary, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you did go up to Morpeth, Arthur, so, you know.
And I'm much the better for that, as a matter of fact. But that's another story.
Yes, exactly.
Day four.
Coenzyme Q10, Pharma Nord, nutritional supplements, multivits.co.uk. It's a sort of piece we're actually doing. Arthur, so much to actually pack in. Anything we should actually raise with Vince Woods other than thank you, Vince, for being you?
No, it's a pleasure working with him. It could be a stressful at times for both of us, I think, mm-hmm. but we have a good working relationship. And we've got other things in the pipeline, so
brilliant.
We just keep our fingers crossed, you know.
Still to come, Hilary Alexander, OBE, fashion consultant, and of course Lou Harbour from the British Heart Foundation will be talking about the Great British Bagathon. We've got Uwe Zivi, chef from the Albion Bakery, from Artisan Foods, who'll be making his show debut. We've got Professor Richard Wiseman on the importance of making a fresh start, Lalanjir Harries, head of wellbeing at Beat Bullying, and Catherine Cullen's principal dietitian at St George's Hospital, William Sitwell, and of course Alan Stennett, author of Lincolnshire Lads on the Veldt, plus of course Vince Woods. Last two questions for Arthur, please. Ed.
Arthur, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the show today?
Very, very interesting. In fact, that letter for me, that letter that was read out, I thought was extremely interesting.
Yeah, well. I think we'll have a word with Alan, see if we can get you a book up there, because I think you'd like it, and I think certainly it's certainly got movie possibilities written all over it, I think, for screenplays and various other factors. So, great news there.
So, interesting both ways round. We thank you, we salute you, sir, mm-hmm. and can we look forward to connecting with you again well in the near future?
Let's hope so, yes.
Incidentally, Arthur, just a minor point for our southern listeners, why did we actually have a Cockney villain in terms of Harrigan? Was it a case of you thought, yeah, well, it's the craze, let's channel that, or did you just think, well, you couldn't possibly have a northern lad as the villain?
Give you a simple answer. He's a good actor.
Nay, sorted.
Convinced.
Now, the Great British Bagathon is obviously one of the fabulous events that's being put forward by the British Heart Foundation, and obviously people have a sense of style, a sense of general wit and wisdom and joie de vivre about the whole thing, so we're delighted to be able to welcome fashion consultant extraordinaire Hilary Alexander to the programme to actually share with us some of her own thoughts on the whole thing, together with, of course, retail expert from the British Heart Foundation, the very own Lou Harbour. Lou and Hilary, good morning, how are you?
Very well, thank you, Alex.
Excellent.
Good
okay,
morning,
so let's talk a little bit about this fabulous sort of event, etc., and why it's such an important thing to keep that sort of style thing going. Hilary, to you first.
Well, firstly, the British Heart Foundation has done research and discovered that the average Brit owns 6 items of clothing, at least, that will never see the light of day. Some of them are new, perhaps still with tags on. Some may be gifts. But the thing is that they're just lurking in the back of the wardrobe, and they can be put to a good cause.
And this is clearly part of that whole thing, the Great British Bagathon in style, from that perspective. So is it more a case of just declutterise one's life and actually start saying, OK, let's look at this, and I'm not going to wear this again, why not put this into the system?
Exactly. I mean, I think everyone needs to go through their wardrobe from time to time, even men, because they're just as much culprits as women. And there are things that you maybe bought on impulse, things you bought and thought you might diet and eventually fit into, things that simply are the wrong colour. Why not just get an old carrier bag or a bin liner, throw them in, and send them off to a British Heart Foundation charity shop? Because all the money will go to research into heart disease, and they work out that every bag is worth probably around £20. Mm.
The aim of the campaign is to raise 1 million items in terms of 1 million bags, I should say, of unwanted items from that point of view. Do you think that's doable?
Well, I think so. Last year we managed to get 600,000 bags. So this year we've set the bar a little higher and we're aiming for 1 million. And it doesn't necessarily need just to be clothes. It can be all those high-heeled shoes you can't walk in, toys, books, CDs, DVDs, anything like that. it all helps.
See, clearly, Hillary, this is why you rightly deserve that OBE. I should have obviously introduced you, Hillary Alexander, OBE. Let's move to Lou very briefly from this particular perspective. You must be delighted to have Hillary on the team.
Absolutely fantastic. A real honour for Hillary to be involved in our Bagathon campaign this year. Mm.
And from your own perspective, was this something when the idea came up you thought, well, let's go with that, or I don't know, that's a bit ambitious? What was the thought?
Well, we think 1 million bags is a nice round number, and we think the great British public will really be able to help us out and rally to the cause and bring a bag of unwanted items into our shop.
Exactly. It's like the equivalent of one Gareth Bale, but that's a different line entirely. So we're talking about all sorts of other areas. So again, clearly the easiest thing to do is to find out where your local British Heart Foundation shop is. There are lots of them all around the country, heaps of ways to actually support that. And Lou, obviously from your own perspective, really good to actually help research into coronary cardio disease and all sorts of other things.
It's absolutely key. Our shops rely on donations from the public that we can then turn into cash. We average, like Hillary said, £20 for every single bag of unwanted items that's donated to our shops. And 1 million bags will make a huge difference to the Foundation's research.
Certainly, looking at some of the figures, last year British Heart Foundation shops raised over £31 million to help the British Heart Foundation fight heart disease. It is actually still the nation's single biggest killer, which I thought was interesting and perhaps particularly pertinent with the sad demise of Sir David Frost, of course, from the media routines. I think he went with a heart attack. 90,000 items every day are being sold by the British Heart Foundation and over 20,000 volunteers. So you must be doing some good stuff there.
We really do try hard to keep our shop stocked with wonderful items that people have donated, and of course people then subsequently come in and buy. Mm.
And Hillary, back to your good self. Clearly one of the aspects of fashion in general, I think, we move from sort of London, Paris, New York, the whole range of other factors, etc. What do you think about a British Heart Foundation's fashion event where you could actually be a consultant for the company? That might be surely something that could be developed, really.
Oh, I think that would be great fun. I actually feel sort of quite personally involved because I had to have open heart surgery 3 years ago to replace a faulty valve. So it is quite close to my heart, so to speak, and excuse the pun.
I thought it was a wonderfully phrased in every sense of the word. Two final questions for both of you fine folk. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition this morning?
I think it's been fantastic, Alex, and I'm very impressed by your knowledge of all the stats regarding the BHM.
Well, it's always critical to actually get the information and research done from that point of view. So can we look forward to hopefully prevailing upon you both to join us again, hopefully in the not-too-distant future, to see whether that million target has actually achieved, or indeed, as I suspect, it's exceeded.
Definitely, we'll be there.
Fantastic.
You,
there we are. Hillary Alexander and Lou Harbour there. In case you're actually wondering, yes, actually, they were pouring water, not over the microphone, but at the start of the actual interview. You can just actually sort of hear this initial opening up here. You'll hear
the little
gurgles coming through here.
Fabulous events that's being put forward by the British Heart Foundation.
I just call it that. It wasn't just that they caught short, it was indeed a pre-record. And clearly they were just sort of pouring some water down. It happens, you know, that's what you call the joy of broadcasting.
7-8. What number is this, Chip?
7-8.
Okay, not me. Don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know.
Oh, I could hide neath the wings of the bluebird as she sings. The 6 o'clock alarm would never ring, but it rings. And I rise, wipe the sleep out of my eyes. My shaven razor's cold and it stings. Cheer up, sleepy Jean. Oh, what can it mean to a daydream believer and a homecoming queen?
You once thought of me as a white knight on his steed. Now you know how happy I can be. Oh, and our good time starts and ends without our loved one to see.
Cheer up, sleepy Jean.
So that would be Peter Tork, Mickey DeLenz, Mike Nesmith, and Davy Jones, late Davy Jones, the Monkees, on Siren 107.3 FM. He's in the studio! Yes, who? Well, the author of Lincolnshire Lads on the Veldt, Letters Home from Volunteer Soldiers in the South African War, 1899 to 1903, Alan Stennett. Good morning.
Good morning, Alex. This doesn't feel right. We should be standing up on the showground in mid-June and talking about the show. It's very odd to be sitting here sometime in September.
Glorious weather.
Something quite different.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, this is what it's all about. Well, we'll be talking about this fabulous book, and I do genuinely mean that, Alan. It's a heart-rending thing, cinematic in so many ways, fascinating scenarios, but just a little pricey before we come up to the news. Written by, or at least based on letters written home by your grandfather, Private Herbert Stennett.
That's great. Herbert Stennett and his brother. There were two of them out there. We had the family letters for some considerable while. We transcribed them, of course, for the benefit of the family. And Sue and I were heading out to South Africa to follow them across South Africa. Oh. And my dad said, oh, we've got some more of those, if you'd like. So we found those. Later, we found that the Lincolnshire Echo had a reporter with the same group of 133 volunteers. Oh. And with the permission of the Echo, we've combined his reports, the two sets of letters, and our impressions of South Africa into the one book.
Already on the show, the former international editor for International Who's Who, and indeed South African-born Richard Fitzwilliam, has thought he was absolutely fantastic. We gave him a little late reading for that. Arthur McKenzie thought extremely well-written, lots of positive stuff coming out there. We'll find out more about this, and a whole heap of other goodies, including the way to make a perfect vegetarian pâté with Uwe Zeewe after the 9 o'clock news from Siren 107.3 FM. Time for Marianne Faithfull.